Well, welcome to First Response, our weekly teleform at First Liberty Institute and podcast with faith leaders from around the country about the coronavirus and religious liberty. I'm Jeremy Dice, one of the attorneys here at First Liberty Institute.
And I'm Justin Butterfield, another attorney here at First Liberty.
Well, Justin, I counted it up the other day. I've now been working from home in my home office and sometimes even my home closet for 5 weeks, which coincidentally is the same number of teleforms we have conducted. It's been an enjoyable event at times, but as I've said to others, I think I need to get back to the office just to slow down my life a little bit.
Yeah, I know what you mean, Jeremy. We have both been working, it seems, almost nonstop, not only on this weekly call, but sending demand letters, and even we've had to file a couple of lawsuits to protect religious freedom during the coronavirus, not to mention keeping track of our regular docket.
That's right. In fact, last week, just after our call, you and I both jumped right into the thick of things. Last Friday, First Liberty Institute filed a lawsuit in Louisville, Kentucky over the mayor's decision there to prevent drive-in churches. In fact, we're going to talk about that case more towards the end of today's call with one of our network attorneys who even helped out on that case.
That's right. We have our friend Kevin Gallagher from the international law firm of WilmerHale joining us. And I'm looking forward to giving those listening today a little insight into what it looks like to work on one of these cases. And Jeremy, in the midst of filing a lawsuit in Kentucky, I know you were busy talking with a pastor in Mississippi about a similar situation at his church down there.
I was. In fact, Pastor Charles Hamilton, some listening may have seen Kelly Shackelford and Pastor Hamilton on Tucker Carlson's show last Friday night talking about that situation. But after our call last Thursday, we sent a letter to the mayor of Greenville, Mississippi, asking him to withdraw his order that made drive-in church unlawful. We didn't hear from him, and that evening the police showed up to Pastor Hamilton's Thursday evening service at King James Bible Baptist Church to tell his people to go home or face fines. One officer even told him that his, quote, rights were being suspended. Well, we'll probably talk more about that case next week with some of our guests then, but suffice to say for now, things are really busy.
They certainly are, and I'm eager to talk more about those cases and give critical updates to pastors listening and wondering what they can do each Sunday. But right now, we have a special guest waiting to give his unique perspective on all of this and maybe even on the CARES Act as well.
Now that you mention it, yes, Senator James Lankford has kindly been waiting to join the discussion. For those of you that are unfamiliar with Senator Lankford, he's one of Oklahoma's two United States senators. Prior to joining the most exclusive debate club in the world, Senator Lankford spent 20 years in ministry, including 15 years either directing student ministry for the Oklahoma Baptist Convention or making memories at Falls Creek Youth Camp, the nation's largest youth camp. In the Senate, he is a tireless advocate for conservative matters, chairing the Senate's Values Actions Team, and serving as an important voice on the Senate's committees on finance and appropriations. So, Senator Lankford, we're honored to have you here, and thanks for joining us on this call today.
You bet. Glad to be able to join.
Senator, let me begin by asking you to give your thoughts on what we've just been discussing regarding the mayors in Kentucky and Mississippi this past week. And indeed, we've seen similar reports around the nation of police forces dispersing people from sitting in their cars with their windows rolled up so that they could go to church, or even in some cases, they've been ticketing those who are sitting in church parking lots just to hear a pastor's sermon. Did you ever think that we would see this happen here in America? And what would you say to those who are concerned about government overreach during this pandemic?
Well, I never thought that we would see it in America, but I'm glad that we have entities like what you're doing at this point and lawyers that are stepping up to be able to push back on it. The very first week that there were even conversations, I got to remember way back in the day, 5 weeks ago, when the conversation was groups of 250 can't gather or more, that quickly within 2 days shifted to 50, then within a couple of days shifted to 10. During that time period, I had churches in my state in Oklahoma reaching out to me and saying, hey, how do we manage this with 250 or with 50? What do we do with this? And my conversation, I immediately reached out to our attorney general here in Oklahoma. I also reached out to the U.S. attorney general, to Attorney General Barr. We had great conversations on it. In Oklahoma, there was an immediate release from our attorney general to all entities, all municipalities around the state, saying religious liberty has to be protected in this, that the state does not have and no municipality has the right to be able to step in and to speak into this. And Attorney General Barr on the national level immediately began engaging on this. agreed with me and said every entity has to be treated equally. In America, you can't say that there are certain places that are going to be open, but religious groups have to be closed because we consider that quote-unquote non-essential. And in the case in Mississippi, where they said even though it's an essential business that faith is quote-unquote essential, we can still step in and tell you how to be able to practice your faith, even when they're doing it consistent with CDC guidelines. So there are some advocates that are out there that are speaking on our behalf on this, but there are also some municipalities that are saying, hey, I don't care. I'm going to try to trample on people's rights. It is always a good thing to be able to remind people that for a couple of centuries plus now, we as a nation have said we have the right to free exercise of religion. That is different than the right to be able to go to a fast food restaurant. It is constitutionally protected and guaranteed.
Thanks for being here, Senator Lankford, and for those comments. And let me shift our discussion to some legislation that is of particular importance to a lot of people around the country right now, the CARES Act. From your perspective, what was the Senate hoping to do with this $1 trillion relief package, especially for faith-based institutions?
So what the plan was is to be able to help stabilize the economy. Obviously, governments all over, state governments and the federal government are stepping back and saying, if we're going to protect the health of Americans, we've got to be able to step back in industry and business right now. People aren't gathering in the same way they have before, but that puts a lot of people by the millions vulnerable in employment issues and just sustaining their families. Most families live paycheck to paycheck, so they can't afford to be able to have a couple of months where they don't have a paycheck coming in. So the initial design was to be able to help businesses be able to reopen when this is over and individuals to be able to still be able to provide for their families on this. But something unique is in this as well, and that's built in for not-for-profits. For the first time ever with the Small Business Administration, not-for-profits are treated the same as for-profit business. There is no discrimination there saying if you're faith-based or non-faith-based, you're treated differently. And it's one of the things myself and a couple others, we pushed pretty hard for behind the scenes when this bill was written to be able to make sure that there wasn't discrimination against an entity simply because of their faith. As we know from recent Supreme Court decisions, the government does not have the ability to be able to say to a faith-based entity, you can have this government benefit as long as you give up your faith first. That is not consistent with who we are, but quite frankly, it has been practiced in the Small Business Administration for decades now. You should not have to sacrifice your faith simply to be able to help take care of your own people. And what is offered in any government program to one entity has to be offered to another one equally.
Well, I think that's a relief for a lot of people, and I'm certain those on the call today are grateful to hear that senators like you and others are paying attention while that legislation is going through the Senate. Some have hinted, though, that giving federal financial relief, even loans used to pay the salary of pastors, would in fact be a violation of the U.S. Constitution. Well, what's your perspective? Must faith-based organizations be excluded from relief packages like the CARES Act?
No, they do not. Historically, as a nation, we have over the last couple of decades, but there's been an awakening in the courts to be able to look at the law and to say what the most basic element of the Constitution, and we've seen it in things like the FEMA regulations. If you went back for disaster relief, if you're in a community that was hit by a tornado or a hurricane or something, or had a large fire, other nonprofits in the area could receive benefits, but if you're a faith-based entity, you could not. That has now been fixed now to say, because that's blatant discrimination, to say if you have faith, you're not welcome in the community. That's not true. You're a member of the community, whether you have faith or whether you do not have faith, we're treated the same. This bill does the exact same thing. It says ultimately a not-for-profit is an employer the same as any other employer. So it treats all entities the same and doesn't discriminate on the basis of your speech. If you're a consultant that's helping people make business decisions, your speech is not discriminated against. Neither should be a pastor in his speech, so that his speech would be discriminated against.
Some great thoughts on that, Senator. And one last question. Senator Lankford, you've spent a significant part of your life as someone engaged in religious ministry. What would you say to pastors and religious leaders listening to our call today as they adjust to doing religious ministry from a distance?
Yeah, this is a pretty radical shift. I don't have to remind pastors and leaders here how radically the church has shifted to do ministry. We're used to running up, and those of us in the South, giving somebody a hug and engaging in a warm handshake on a Sunday morning and being able to invite people to be able to gather with us. And now we can do none of those things at this point to be able to help protect each other. I would tell you that this has pushed a lot of churches to be able to experiment with ministry and to be able to reach out in ways that we have not done for a long time and should have for a long time. There are churches that I've talked to that have said, hey, we've thought about doing online streaming services for a while to be able to help people, but we've just not done it. Well, they are now. People are by the thousands are gathering online, and churches are providing unique options to be able to do that. That's a help. In a strange way, I see what's going on now in the church is similar to what happened in the book of Acts when the stoning of Stephen occurred, which was such a dramatic, horrible event to have the public stoning of Stephen, but it pushed the church out of Jerusalem, and it was used by God in that dramatically terrible event for God to be able to push the church into new places and new methods and new locations of ministry that were very different. We're watching in COVID-19 the pushing of the church to be able to reach out online, to be able to pick up the phone and start calling people again, which some churches have grown out of the habit of just checking on people that are shut-ins, and deacons checking on families to be able to make sure they've got basic needs. We're back to doing who we are as a church again and reaching out in entirely new ways. And I would tell you, people by the thousands have come to know Christ through the online platforms that have happened. And Easter Sunday suddenly became a Sunday of no distractions, other than if you can sit down and get a chance to be able to hear the pure message about Jesus. There's no other Easter egg hunt to distract you. There's no other roast that's in the oven to distract you. It's just the message of Jesus. And so it was a unique opportunity to take that message to even more places. And I think that will continue to accelerate in the future.
Oh, we certainly hope so and are grateful for those kind words and thoughtful reflections. Senator Lankford, thank you for the service you provide to our country. And thanks very much for taking the time in your very busy schedule to join us in this conversation today.
No, glad to be able to do it. Thanks for what you continue to be able to do to be able to speak up for our most basic constitutional freedoms.
Our pleasure. Well, Justin, Senator Lankford made several very important points in his comments this morning, and not just on the importance of religious liberty and things like the CARES Act, but also about situations like what we've been litigating in the last week. People just trying to have some sense of normalcy through these things like drive-in church, only to be threatened with penalties if they do, regardless of whether or not they're following CDC guidelines.
Yeah, and I understand their frustration. You know, we're seeing quite a few orders that say you can do this thing, like sitting in your car in your other cars or picking up food from a drive-through window, or even you can all sit together listening to one person speak from a podium up at the front, like at a press conference. You just can't do that if it's for religious purposes. That is prohibited. But Jeremy, that's not religious freedom. And I suspect that James Madison would be furious were he here to see religious gatherings treated worse than McDonald's drive-thrus or Walmart parking lots or press conferences. But perhaps what this virus has done more than anything else is reveal just how precious our first freedom really is.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And that sets things very well for our next guest, who knows a thing or two about what these important principles of religious liberty mean and actually how even to defend them. Kevin Gallagher is a senior associate at the international law firm of WilmerHale in Washington, D.C., as you said at the beginning, Justin. He holds a bachelor's degree from Grove City College and then graduated from the University of Virginia School of Law. He's a former clerk to the Honorable Alice Batchelder of the United States Court of Appeals for the Sixth Circuit. And Kevin's typical practice is what we might call in the legal field a complex civil litigation docket. That just means he's really busy litigating cases around the country. Careful listeners of our past teleforums will remember the name WilmerHale from our interview with Matt Martins a few weeks ago. Together, Kevin and Matt have worked on several religious liberty matters with First Liberty Institute, all of which have been profoundly successful. Since we just had Senator Lankford on the call, it bears mentioning that Kevin and his team at WilmerHale are also drafting a critical brief representing Senator Lankford on an important matter of religious liberty before the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Second Circuit, and they're doing that, of course, with First Liberty Institute, for which we are extremely grateful. Kevin, thanks for the work you have done, the work you are doing, and the work we hope you will continue to do, and also for joining us on this call today.
Thanks for having me, Jeremy and Justin, and also thanks to Senator Lankford for being on the call. He's a tough act to follow, but I'll try to do my best.
Well, now it seems, Kevin, that you do your best legal work in the middle of the night. You know, I say that because several years ago, you and I stayed up most of the night writing a brief to defend a synagogue in California that had been sued by a poultry rights organization. Yeah, you heard that right, a poultry rights organization. They were trying to prevent the rabbi from performing an ancient religious ritual involving a chicken. That's a great case to look up at firstliberty.org. But then just last week, you worked until the very wee hours of the morning on a petition that would ultimately enjoin the city of Louisville and its mayor from enforcing its ban on drive-in church services right on the night before, as a matter of fact, of Easter Sunday. But I know your commitment to the First Amendment extends even into the daylight. So can you give our listeners a sense of what it's like to work through the night briefing such cases and why in the world you would do that?
Absolutely. And I'll say as an aside that I think the two latest nights I've pulled at the firm have been with you all. So that's something. But at this point, you're basically just working on pure adrenaline. In the chicken case that we, as we call it, and the drive-in church service case that you mentioned, we had a looming holiday. And so last week, I knew that if we didn't get the suit on file on Good Friday, and if we didn't make good arguments, our client would forever lose the right to celebrate Easter in accordance with their sincerely held religious beliefs. And if that's not motivation, then I don't know what is. And basically, I do this work because it's something I believe in. I'm grateful that I live in a country where I can freely practice my own religion and where our Constitution protects my right to do so. And so as a lawyer, the least I can do is to try to help others freely exercise their religion.
Well, Kevin, we are very grateful for the late hours that you've put in on behalf of people who do simply want to exercise their First Amendment freedoms. And let me ask you specifically about Louisville. What was it about Mayor Fisher's order there that was the most concerning to you, and how did you evaluate it under the First Amendment?
It's a great question. For me, I think the most concerning thing was the timing. So as we all know, Easter is one of the holiest days on the Christian calendar, and it was during Holy Week, leading up to Easter, that Mayor Fisher had announced that the city would be prohibiting all church worship gatherings, including drive-in services. And our client had been conducting drive-in services that adhered to both CDC and Kentucky State Health guidelines for several weeks. And so just days before Easter, they were all of a sudden told they couldn't freely exercise their religion. So under the First Amendment, you're immediately thinking of targeting. The mayor's prohibition was very specific. It applied to church services only. And so the mayor was still allowing similar social interaction at retail and commercial establishments. I think you all mentioned, you know, the Walmart parking lot, the McDonald's. But now our client was not able to similarly gather for Easter. And the First Amendment is very clear that the government can't target religious gatherings while ignoring non-religious gatherings. And so that's how we were evaluating it when we were putting together the papers.
Well, that's a good evaluation. And I know you're an influential attorney, but I didn't realize just how influential you must be, because I think Judge Justin Walker, who we submitted our petition to, he may have just followed your example. I think we filed the petition late Good Friday afternoon, and his order granting our request for a temporary restraining order arrived, I think, midday Saturday, if I'm not mistaken. In other words, it looks like he and his clerks pulled an all-nighter, too, to give us that opinion. So give us a sense of Judge Walker's reasoning and maybe a few of your favorite quotes from the opinion.
Yeah, absolutely. Judge Walker really did seem to get it. The fact that his opinion came out less than 24 hours after we filed the suit, I think, showed that he understood how important this was. And so while I do feel bad for his clerks for probably pulling an all-nighter, they all seemed to get that this was something that was worth their time. And the opinion itself, I thought, did a pretty good job of explaining why the mayor's order about drive-in services was not neutral or not generally applicable, and so was likely a free exercise violation, and also why it was a substantial burden on our client's religion, which then did not pass the strict scrutiny test, to use some legal jargon, which then also meant it was probably a violation of the Kentucky Religious Freedom Act. And as for my favorite part, I mean, I will probably remember this day very vividly. My wife and I were sitting in the parking lot of a Chick-fil-A, actually, getting some curbside Chick-fil-A, and I got the order in my email. So I tried to read it as quickly as possible, and the first two sentences say, "On Holy Thursday, an American mayor criminalized the communal celebration of Easter." That sentence is one that this court never expected to see outside the pages of a dystopian novel, or perhaps the pages of The Onion. I also kind of scanned the page and saw references to St. Paul and the Pilgrims, and I figured at that point it would be a pretty good opinion for us.
Well, Kevin, let me ask you one final question. We have a lot of pastors and religious leaders listening to our call today. As a lawyer who has worked on several important religious liberty cases now, what is your encouragement to those seeking to take advantage of their First Amendment freedoms, both now during a pandemic and also in the future?
Yeah, so I would think first, and you know, this is a little plug, but I would call First Liberty. I mean, you all do awesome work on the front lines. We're happy to help you when we can, but you all are there doing the great work day in and day out. And so I would talk to the experts, being you all. And I think this is really an interesting point in that the pandemic presents a microcosm as to why the First Amendment is so important. You have a situation where government authority is coming into conflict with constitutional rights on a daily basis and on a nationwide scale. And so on a personal level, as a Christian, I believe we should respect the government's authority under Romans 13. I think we should also do what we can to make sure that our church members and our communities are safe and healthy. But religious liberty doesn't go away just because there's a pandemic. In fact, it might be these unique situations exactly where our constitutional rights become even more important. And so I think I would just echo what I believe you said, Jeremy, in a recent press release, that there isn't a pandemic exception to the First Amendment. In other words, the First Amendment is an important right. The right to freely exercise your religion is important in normal times, and it should be just as important, if not more important, in these very unique times that we find ourselves in. So that's what I would say to encourage folks who are thinking through these issues, is that it might be just this time, for such a time as this, that we need to stand up for our rights.
Well, those are critically important points you've just made, Kevin, and well put. Thank you so much for the work you have done with First Liberty Institute and for joining us on this conversation today as well.
Happy to join, and thanks for having me.
Thanks, Kevin. Well, and Jeremy, Louisville isn't the only case that Kevin, Wilmer Hale, and First Liberty partnered on this week. At the same time we were preparing to defend On Fire Church in Louisville, we were also working to protect King James Bible Baptist Church in Greenville, Mississippi, which you briefly mentioned earlier. Can you tell us a little bit about what happened there?
Yeah, this was another situation where a pastor of a church in Greenville, Mississippi, wanted to offer a drive-in service for his congregants in which everyone would stay in their cars. They parked at least 6 feet apart with their windows rolled up and listened to the sermon that he would preach outside. Completely in compliance with CDC recommendations, but the mayor of Greenville, Mississippi, he banned all drive-in services, and the police actually showed up in force at his church on a Thursday evening when he was having his midweek service. One of the officers that rolled up before the service began, he told the pastor that his rights were suspended. And at another church across town in Greenville, the police actually issued citations to everyone who attended, $500 per person in the car, again, attending in a drive-in service with the windows up and the doors shut. The police did more to make the spread of COVID-19 possible by handing out the citations than the congregants did in their cars. And the mayor claimed that this was all necessary because, quote, people of faith like to fellowship, as though being religious makes you somehow incapable of taking care of yourself.
Yeah, that's really sad, Jeremy. And you know, with the police officer's comment that their rights were suspended, that's just so very, very wrong. But I've seen police officers before who had the idea that Sydney ordinances could trump fundamental rights, and that's just wrong. I was once representing a street preacher several years ago, and he was arrested for street preaching. And the officer said, "This is a city law. The Constitution doesn't apply." Well, thankfully, courts disagreed with that officer, and I was able to successfully defend that preacher. So, Jeremy, what happened in Greenville?
Well, we didn't have to get that far either. With two churches suing the mayor and the city, King James Bible Baptist Church and the other church whose congregants were all issued citations, and then the United States Department of Justice took some action as well to intervene in the case and make a very clear statement that the United States of America is against the mayor and the city. The mayor had a change of heart late in the day that we actually filed our lawsuit, and he agreed that drive-in church services were perfectly fine. And I'm happy to report, in fact, that last night our pastor there had services without any presence of police officers.
Well, that's great. It's just too bad that so many churches and religious organizations around the country have to resort to filing lawsuits to get this outcome in the first place. But that's why here at First Liberty, we've made educating the public about religious freedom one of our priorities, so that not just people who've been attacked or penalized for following their religious convictions can understand their rights, but so that mayors, governors, and police officers can understand Americans' religious liberty rights also, and not do things that trample their rights in the first place.
That's exactly right, Justin. And unfortunately, I think that means that our time for today's education about religious freedom rights may have just come to an end.
You mean you don't want to hang out with me anymore today?
Justin, I'd be happy to hang out with you longer, but right now I'm recording this in my closet to avoid any echo, and I've been in here about as long as I can bear it for one day.
Yeah, same here. Well, for those of you listening, be sure to continue to join us every Friday at noon Eastern, 11 Central for this call, which we will have for at least as long as the coronavirus has us all shut in. And if you miss an episode live, you can find them recorded on our website at firstliberty.org, along with any resources that we discussed during that episode.
Yes, and you can also find out about our cases in Louisville, Kentucky and Greenville, Mississippi at firstliberty.org. Be sure to watch the interview that Kelly had with Pastor Hamilton and Tucker Carlson last Friday, which is also posted on our website. And check out all the other information about all the many other cases that we're still litigating during the midst of this pandemic that are not related to the pandemic that we have also to defend and restore America's religious freedom rights. But until next week, I'm Jeremy Dice.
And I'm Justin Butterfield.
And you've been listening to First Response. Thanks so much for listening. We'll talk to you next week.